also in this area. John, I wonder what you've seen.
Well, Scott, about 5 minutes ago, we heard four loud reports. It sounded like flashbangs as well. There were two in a row, about 10, 15 seconds later, two more. And that's been the latest news from here. A bomb squad also arrived carrying a robot. They went in about 5, 10 minutes ago also.
CBS News producer John Bentley. John, thank you very much. The police have the area surrounded, and we have a number of correspondents, reporters, and producers, photographers there as well.
You are listening to live continuing coverage of the search for the Boston Marathon bomber. Shots fired, lots of police activity in Watertown, Massachusetts tonight. It appears they have surrounded that suspect in a boat in the backyard of a home there. Continuing coverage from CBS, this is WCCO and WCCO HD, KMNB FM HD2, Minneapolis and St. Paul at 7 o'clock.
Suspects encountered police about 1 a.m. this morning in the dead of the night. There was a ferocious firefight. The man on the left, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, 26 years old, was killed in the firefight. Bombs were thrown at police. About 200 rounds were exchanged in the firefight with police north of Boston, in the Boston suburbs. But in the course of that firefight, Tsarnaev's younger brother, 19-year-old Jokar, got away on foot. City of Boston has been locked down all day. The governor of Massachusetts told the people of Boston, do not go to work, do not go to school, stay in your homes, keep the doors locked, do not open the door to anyone but a uniformed police officer. That precipitated a house-to-house, block-by-block search of about 20 blocks in the Watertown and Cambridge area. We have seen heavily armed, heavily armored police officers, federal agents, even National Guardsmen as they search this area. About 2 hours ago, the authorities came out for their first substantive news conference to tell us what was happening all day, and they essentially said that they had lost the suspect, had lost his trail. The search of that area had turned up nothing, and they called on the suspect to give himself up. It wasn't 30 minutes after that press briefing that we got word that a man had been discovered in a boat at 67 Franklin Street. Shots had been fired, and the police converged on the area. And that is where this story is frozen in time at the moment. We have verified with multiple sources that there was a man around the boat, in the boat, that shots were fired. We don't know in which direction. An ambulance went in, it has not come out, and now the police have locked down this whole area, and we are waiting to find out what happens next. Is the man who is apparently cornered by this police cordon, Jokar Tsarnaev, 19 years old, one of the people that the FBI believes was involved in the bombings at the Boston Marathon on Monday? That we do not know. Police, citizens, everyone in Boston have been on edge all day long as this manhunt has unfolded. The two suspects, police tell us, killed a police officer last night, a campus officer for the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. This is that police officer, Sean Collier, 26 years old, was shot to death in his police cruiser not long after midnight. He had been on the force about a year. After that, the suspects hijacked a car, threw the driver out unharmed, led the police on a chase through the northern suburbs of Boston, throwing bombs out of the car, gunfire as well on the pursuing officers. The car came to a halt for reasons we do not know. A firefight ensued at that location. More bombs were thrown. 200 rounds of ammunition, we are told, was expended. The elder brother, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, was killed in that firefight, but the younger brother, Jokar, 19 years old, escaped on foot. No sign of him since, until perhaps this moment. What we're waiting to find out is, whether indeed the police and the FBI have found the suspect that they've been searching for so diligently all day long. John Miller?
What's interesting, Scott, is this was for a SWAT team search for a suspect, an unusually large perimeter. This was a 20-block perimeter in a house in a neighborhood of very close together houses and winding, curving streets. And yet, if you look at Spruce Street, where the gunfire and bomb throwing encounter was last night, where the first suspect was killed, and you look at the street that they're on now, you're looking at a distance of about 4 blocks away. It could suggest that when he went on the run, that's about as far as he drove when he dumped that car, got out of the car, and may have just found the best hiding place he could. It's possible, if that is our suspect in that boat, that he may have been there the entire time, or he may have hidden someplace and then poked his head out and found a better place to hide. But it's really not far away from where all this started at 10:30 last night.
One of the reporters from our CBS station in Boston, WBZ, Jim Armstrong, was among the first to arrive as police were pouring into this neighborhood. We have Jim now. And Jim, can you give us a sense of everything that you've seen since you arrived there?
Absolutely, Scott. It has been a very, very tense past hour or so here. We are roughly about a quarter of a mile from where police had us staged for the bulk of the day. As soon, Scott, as they called off the stay in the shelter-in-place order, pretty much as soon as the governor said it was okay to leave your home, there was an immediate change in police behavior in and around the Watertown area. They started driving much faster. They started using their sirens again. Helicopters came back out, started flying lower. The helicopters often use a searchlight. They were flashing their searchlights. You could tell immediately that something was changing. Within less than 10 minutes after the shelter-in-place order was lifted, from our position about a quarter of a mile away, you could hear rapid-fire gunfire, staccato-like gunfire, that lasted for 15 or 20 seconds. Everybody in my position dropped to the ground, and then hundreds of police cruisers started heading west from where we were. So my photographer and I hopped in our car and followed them here. We were one of the first people along with police to arrive at the scene. It's behind a couple of industrial buildings. So we ran as quickly as we could, staying low to the ground to get a sense of where the suspect may be hiding. But police immediately turned us around. Massachusetts State Police pointed us back and said, "He's shooting towards you. He is shooting towards you." And they pushed us back behind a retaining wall. That was about 20 minutes ago. And now we are back behind a 3- or 4-story office building at an angle at which we're led to believe any gunfire would not reach us. As you can hear, helicopters overhead, they continue to do circles over and over this area. And a lot of police are maintaining very tense positions with their attention and their weapons focused in a very specific area behind this office park.
Jim, it was your understanding from the police, however, that the suspect was firing. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. And I couldn't tell by the nature of the gunfire if it was being returned or if it was only the suspect firing out. That was unclear at the time.
Jim Armstrong of WBZ. Jim, thank you very much. We'll come back to you as the developments warrant. Jim and I just used the word suspect when we were discussing all of this, and I want to emphasize to everyone that we do not know whether the man that police apparently have surrounded now in Watertown is Jokar Tsarnaev. We do not know that, but Tsarnaev is the 19-year-old who is the last remaining suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings and has been the target of an intense manhunt all day long in this area. These are live pictures that you are watching of the massive police response. John Miller, I wonder, we have been watching this now for about an hour. Is it too much to say that if this was nothing, these officers wouldn't still be there? This has been going on for a while.
It has been going on for a while, and these are, I mean, these are the kind of things where, you know, you want to slow down the incident, and I think they've done a good job of that. And they have a number of things that they need to do. But I think even if it were nothing, even if there were no movement, no indications, they would still take such a methodical approach because of the layered, and when I say layered threat, I mean there's a potentially violent individual there, he's potentially armed, and he's potentially armed with explosives. It requires different tools and different specialists from law enforcement agencies from different disciplines. So you need to put together this integrated team, make sure you have everything on hand for any of those exigent circumstances that can come up as you move closer to that boat to resolve this situation. And there's one last piece I left out, which is the guy who comes with no equipment except a mouth and an ear, and that's the hostage negotiator, who is probably the trained person who would be the one to try and start that dialogue as they make that approach.
You are listening to live coverage from Boston on the search for the second bombing suspect from the Boston Marathon. Police authorities have surrounded a boat in the backyard of a home in Watertown, Massachusetts. Apparently, someone, presumably the second suspect, is in that boat. And shots have been fired, and we're waiting to see what happens next. We return to live continuing coverage here on WCCO.
You think of the Washington sniper case. Here's a case where the license plate goes out, a truck driver sees them in a rest stop, calls, and a SWAT team very quickly arrives, and they did a dynamic entry on that car, which means they approached with the element of surprise very quickly, smashed all the windows, pulled the suspects out. The element of surprise was important there because they were obviously armed and dangerous, and of course, when they did that, they ended up waking them up. They were both tired. They were both asleep. So when you do an approach like this, you never know what you're going to get.
We have been watching all day, have been on the air much of the day, watching the police and federal agents and members of the National Guard hunting a terrorist suspect in the city of Boston. The city of Boston's been locked down most of the day. The governor of Massachusetts telling people to stay in their homes and lock their doors as the police conducted a search, an intensive search, in about 20 blocks of Watertown and Cambridge, the northern suburbs of Boston, looking for the last remaining suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings. So we are watching now a live picture of a scene that filled with police officers about an hour and a half ago. Word of a man in the area that they had been searching, hiding in a boat or around a boat behind a house. Here is the picture of the house in the left, a picture shot at another time, of course, and there is a boat that you can see behind it. Bob Orr is in Washington, and he has been speaking with his law enforcement sources as we watch this live event unfold. Bob?
Scott, I think we're all going to learn a collective lesson here in patience, because no one is going to be in a hurry here on the law enforcement side. Officials have made it very, very clear to me. I've reached out to a couple of officials in the last 20 minutes or so, and they say, look, if this is our suspect, and I think there is some optimism that it is, they've got a situation that's relatively contained. I use that word with caution. I mean, he's not in custody. Clearly, he's, you know, got a platform there that he could still cause some havoc from. But the investigators have to approach this as if they now have, among other things, time on their side, and they will make a decision here on how they want to proceed. It's going to be very slow. I don't think anyone who's with us here should expect this to end quickly. As John will point out to you, I think an effort will be made if the suspect chooses to go this direction to capture him alive. That is, if this is the suspect we're looking for, because of the intelligence value. But it's clear. I mean, in talking to a couple of officials, they're saying no, there's no reason now to make a mistake. You know, they've all day long methodically gone through a very dangerous, intense search. It appears now that it's all focused on this one block on Franklin Street in Watertown. And there's an army, a cordon of police officials and cars around that location. All the specialists are there. The hostage rescue team is there. All the SWAT resources are there. It's obvious that negotiators are available, if not already there. And as some of the reporters in the field have pointed out to us in the past, they've also got eyes in the sky and have for some time now with helicopters. So we might be in for a longer wait now than we thought, because this is going to be a deliberate, slow, calculated pace. And I think I want to emphasize again what John has said. In some ways and in many ways here, the suspect will dictate what happens next. Scott.
Bob, thanks very much for that. We Don Baylor is our CBS News correspondent at the scene. We've also had WCBS reporter Lou Young at the scene as well. Don, can you describe for us what you're seeing now? Things are intense there, but there doesn't seem to be a great deal of activity, at least on the perimeter, that we're seeing.
No, that's exactly right, Scott. We're about a mile from where this is taking place. But what's most remarkable is just how quickly the situation changed here. They had the press conference, said that things were standing down here. You know, a lot of the police officers and the National Guardsmen and the SWAT teams were here all day from early this morning, and they were conducting this methodical dragnet all day long, probably walking for miles at a high level of stress, a high level of tension. And you know how exhausting that can be for these people. So they're working this area, this 20 square blocks or so area, all day long. It did get fairly warm too, and they're wearing full armor, full Kevlar, many of them. So when we saw them stand down and start to leave, it was almost you could see their shoulders kind of sag a little bit. I suspect both out of frustration and disappointment that they hadn't gotten the man yet, but also probably just weariness. Well, they started to saddle up, as they say, take their cars out of here. As soon as the reports of the shots being fired happened, they turned around. They came squealing back here as if they hadn't been working the fields all day long and the yards and the streets out here trying to find these people. I mean, the energy level just shot through the roof here, and that obviously indicates just how desperately and deliberately and determinedly they are trying to find this individual. So if there's a group in this whole area that hopes more than anyone else that this is in fact the real thing, I guarantee you it's those people over there standing here down the road where you see the flashing lights. They want to get the job done.
Don, is this the exact same neighborhood where we have been watching this house-to-house search all day long?
Yes, that's part of it, actually. Dexter Street was one of the areas where they were looking very closely. That's near Franklin Street. There's Dexter, Laurel is all in that particular neighborhood there, which is generally in that direction from where I'm standing. They, of course, were, when we got here early this morning, the cordon was down this street about three blocks, and they had just started expanding it out. They ended up taking it out around 20 blocks or so, and then marching in a phalanx in many ways, as you saw house to house in the video that we shot in these neighborhoods, trying to check out everything. But if you think about that big an area, I don't care how many thousands of police you have spread out over there, you can't check everything. You're going to miss some things. There's a bush that goes unnoticed, or, you know, it's just impossible to notice every little tiny place. So I think, you know, right now we don't know if this is the suspect. We don't know what's going on exactly. As you've been saying very, very carefully and responsibly, we know there is a man who's spotted in a boat. He looks alive. He is moving. And there were shots fired at that time. We don't know from him or at him or just in the air. We don't know. But what we do know is that the response was massive going back in there again. And they're not standing down right now. They are back in the staging area, and they're back down at the end of the road close to where this activity is taking place.
You're watching live coverage of this police action in Watertown, Massachusetts, in the area where police have been searching all day for the remaining suspect in the Boston Marathon bombings. His name is Jokhar Tsarnaev. He's 19 years old. Police tell us that he and his brother were involved in a firefight with police last night. The brother was killed in that firefight. A police officer was gravely wounded in that firefight. Now they have been searching all day long. Apparently the 19-year-old Jokhar was able to escape from the firefight on foot and has been the subject of a remarkable manhunt all day long that has locked down one of America's largest great cities, Boston, all day long. Late today, the governor of Massachusetts essentially sounded an all clear in as much as he told people you don't have to be locked in your homes anymore. You can go out. You must be vigilant, but you can go out and do your daily business as you would. But it was only about 30 minutes later, after they held that news conference to tell us that they had lost the suspect, that this action unfolded. This is a live picture of the neighborhood. In this area, there is a house, and we have a photograph of the house.
Time now is 7:20. This is WCCO Radio. You are listening to live continuing coverage from Boston on the search for the Boston Marathon suspect believed to be holed up in a boat in Watertown, Massachusetts. Police have him surrounded. 7:20 on WCCO.
Police converged on this location, and we have been waiting to see what happened ever since. Anthony Mason has been working on painting a fuller picture of these two brothers who are considered the suspects, excuse me, in the bombing. 19-year-old Jokar Tsarnaev, who's on the loose, and Tamerlan Tsarnaev, his 26-year-old brother, who was killed last night. Anthony?
One interesting point here, Scott, is that Tamerlan, the 26-year-old, placed an unexpected call last night at about 7 o'clock to his uncle, unexpected because his uncle literally hadn't heard from him in 2 or 3 years. So this call came out of the blue. It was probably shortly after his picture appeared on national television, although the uncle, Alvi Tsari, told us he hadn't seen that picture. He wasn't aware his nephew was in trouble. But Tamerlan called just to reach out to him to say, I'm sorry I haven't been in touch. And they spoke for about 10 minutes. Tamerlan apologized. He asked for forgiveness from his uncle for being distant for so long, and that they ended up praying on the phone together. A couple of interesting things emerging today about Tamerlan is that he was a championship boxer. He actually won the 2010 Golden Glove Championship in New England, winning the heavyweight category. I spoke with the fellow who was his corner man in 2010, who said he was a tremendous boxer in tremendous condition, and he would have gone on to the Nationals in the Golden Gloves if he had not been a foreigner. And because he was a foreigner, the runner-up went instead. And it was shortly after that that Tamerlan essentially stopped boxing, or at least stopped showing up to their boxing club. As Jim Axelrod learned today from someone who used to box with him, it seemed within the last year or two that Tamerlan changed somehow. He became quieter and sort of more disciplined. There was a photo essay that appeared a number of years ago. The exact date is a little unclear, but it showed pictures of Tamerlan training in the boxing ring, and there were a number of captions attached to that essay. In one of them, Tamerlan says, I don't have a single American friend. I don't understand them. He also described himself in those captions as a Muslim. He said he didn't smoke or drink anymore. He said there are no values anymore, and worried that people can't control themselves anymore. Again, Tamerlan, this is the brother, the 26-year-old, who was killed in that barrage of gunfire last night. As you said, Scott, 200 rounds. It is his younger brother, Jahar, who is only 19, a college sophomore, who is apparently in hiding right now in that boat in the backyard in Watertown.
If indeed he is the one that the police have cornered in that backyard. Anthony, thank you very much. Anthony was mentioning, John Miller, this surprising telephone call that the older brother made to the uncle who he hadn't spoken to in years. You were telling me earlier that a trained police investigator would have been very worried about that development.
One of the things they teach you in the hostage negotiating courses is when somebody says, well, you know, I want to, before I come out, I want to talk to, you know, my mom. I want to call my dad. I want to talk to my sister. And, you know, they always say, well, why don't you come out and then we'll put you in touch with them. And they say, no, I want to make these calls now. Then it sends up the signals of what they, it's a phenomenon they call suicide ritual, which is people want to have a chance to say goodbye, close out certain matters. In this case, the idea that on the day when every minute on every news station they were saying in a few moments they're going to show you a picture of the bomber placing the bomb there and another person he's with, that he chose that moment, knowing that he was likely to be identified later that day, to call somebody he hadn't spoken to in a year, a family member. A profiler would tell you that's indicative of a guy who wants to settle some matters about people he cares about, because he may not plan to be around much longer. And when you look at his actions the following night, where he throws a bomb at police and then charges into their gunfire, one could extrapolate from that it might have been in his mind as he made those calls to make amends and possibly say goodbye. As Anthony told us earlier, they had a long chat about being back in contact, and then they prayed together over the phone. That he might have known that this was very possible, he would not make it to the end of the week.
You are watching live coverage of the search for the Boston Marathon bombers. This is a live picture in Watertown, Massachusetts, just across the Charles River from Boston. Police have been searching about 20 blocks of this area of Watertown and Cambridge all day long for Jokhar Tsarnaev, the 19-year-old brother who is believed to be the only surviving suspect from Monday's Boston Marathon bombings. The police tell us that there is a man down this block who was located or seen in a boat that was behind a house. This is a photograph of the house taken at another time. You can see the boat there in the back. This is the address where this police action is directed right now, 67 Franklin Street in Watertown. Shots were heard by a number of witnesses shortly after the report of the man in the boat, and ever since then, we have been looking at this police presence in this neighborhood. An ambulance went in, but apparently has not come out. We have not heard shots fired again, but we are bringing you this picture live as we wait for developments. Bob Orr is in Washington, talking to his sources there. And Bob, I wonder what you have that's new.
Well, Scott, I think we may have answered one of the mysteries that John Miller raised a little while earlier. How did they find the guy in the boat? What led the police response there in Watertown to this particular location? One of the tools they used was a thermal imaging device, a heat-seeking device, which when, you know, mounted on a helicopter, an eye on the sky, you can find heat in places where it shouldn't be. That was part of the puzzle, and then I'm told there was a person in the area who noticed that the tarp on the boat was askew. The theory here is that sometime during the darkness hours, after this shootout that we've been talking about played out, and when the suspect got out on foot, presuming that this is likely to be the suspect in the boat, the theory is, if it is the suspect from the bombings, he might have made his way to a location that looked like a fairly good hiding place and maybe slipped under the tarp on the boat and maybe didn't get it completely reseated in a proper position. But the combination of thinking that he was in this hemmed-in area because he didn't have enough time and hadn't stolen any additional cars to escape the cordon, that combination with patrols and heat-seeking thermal-type imaging equipment and a keen eye from a witness, apparently, all added up to this being now a very hot location. When I've asked officials, can you say with certainty that this is the suspect, Jokhar Tsarnaev, that you're looking for, you know, they take a deep breath and they say, well, we think so because we see no other plausible explanation. But when you press a little bit and say, have you made a visual confirmation, are you absolutely sure, they have to concede they're not absolutely sure. But the clearly, and it goes without saying almost, the clear operating presumption here, and the tactical response is calibrated against this, that, that it is the suspect, that he likely is armed and still is dangerous. They're a little bit puzzled by one thing, and that is, while there have been reports of some movement, it's been described in various places as maybe flailing around or moving. They don't see a great deal of movement, and it's as if the person who is in the boat, whoever this is, it's as if he's very still for long periods. Maybe, you know, it was even suggested maybe even passed out. So as far as I know, they have not made any contact with him, with the negotiators. I'm not even sure that's been tried. That is, though, as we've been saying, one of the tools in the arsenal that they could use if they found a suspect who was willing to talk to them.
Bob, thank you for that.